Let me tell you about a woman named Clara. For 30 years, she was the kind of wife people quietly admired. She showed up to things. She remembered the important dates. She fixed the problems before anyone else noticed them. And one evening, her husband of 30 years said to her, very gently, I feel like you see right through me lately. Like I'm just part of the background. Clara was stunned. She had not missed a single appointment, a single birthday, a single bill. She had given, by any account, constantly, and she had been looking right past him the whole time. That's the thing about the nearest bond. It's so close, so stable, so forgiving that we treat it like furniture, something that holds us up so we can reach outward toward the things we think still need us. We give our best attention to folks you barely know, we barely know. We give our cleanest manners to strangers. And the person who has crossed every desert for us and would do it again gets the leftover version of us at the end of the day. Week 5 of this practice is the last one, and it's the hardest one, and it goes in the direction we least expect, straight toward the person who's already closest. Here's what's going on with Clara, and with almost every close bond that quietly loses its color while the people in it are still trying to be good. The nearest bond is the most forgiving bond. It absorbs things. A partner, an oldest friend, a parent you're close to, they forgive the half attention, the, sorry, I was thinking about something else, the week you went quiet because work was hard. They forgive it because they know you and because the bond is deep enough to hold through a rough patch. But that forgiveness turns into a quiet tax. We stop trying in the direction of the people who we know will let it pass. We save the effort, the eye contact, the real question, the phone down moment, for the relationship that might walk away if we don't. The near bond doesn't walk away. So without meaning to, we spend our best presence outward, and the people holding the center of our lives get a version of us that's already used up. GMR, the fifth book, is about exactly this. The nearest bonds are the ones that hold a whole life together from the inside out. And they hold precisely because they forgive, which means they are the easiest ones to quietly hollow out. So what does it mean to spend on the closest? Because I don't mean money, and I don't mean grand gestures. I want to be specific about this, because vague advice is the enemy of actually doing anything. Presence costs you when it means you gave up something else to be there. If you sat down to dinner and you really listened, no phone, no thinking about tomorrow, no half answers while you're already moving to the next thing, that cost you the ease of distraction and the other person felt it. If you went for a walk with your oldest friend and you asked the real question, the one you've been circling for 6 months, that cost you the safety of staying surface level. If you told someone close to you, I'm choosing you tonight, the other thing can wait. The cost there is the admission that they are a choice you are actively making, which is more than most people ever say out loud to the people who need to hear it most. Presence costs when it has to be given up from somewhere else. Attention that costs you nothing registers as nothing. Attention that costs you the easier evening registers as something real. That's the whole idea. Not more time, not more money, not a bigger gesture. Just presence you had to give something up for. Here's a pushback I want to take seriously because I've heard it and it's fair. This sounds like you're telling me to make closeness. If the relationship is real, shouldn't this just happen naturally? Why do I need a practice for the person I'm already closest to? Good question. And the honest answer is, because natural doesn't mean automatic. Most close bonds don't fail because the people in them stopped caring. They fade because caring stopped being something the people in them did on purpose. The everydayness of a close bond, the habit of the person being there, works against you. you start to assume you've already given the thing you haven't given yet. You think she knows I love her, and let that do the work that actually showing it would do. And over months and years, the bond holds, but the warmth leaks out. A practice doesn't make closeness less real. It makes it less lazy. You're not making the feeling. You're making sure the feeling gets expressed instead of just assumed. Every person who has ever kept a close bond alive through a long life will tell you the same thing. They did something, small and on purpose, over and over. The natural feeling is real. The on-purpose act is what keeps it warm. Let me bring in one piece of outside grounding here, because it isn't just a feeling. Researchers who have spent years looking at what makes long, close bonds last. The friendships that go 40 years. The marriages that arrive warm at the end. The adult-child-parent bonds that stay alive instead of polite. They keep finding the same thing. The bonds that held were the ones where the people in them made what researchers sometimes call small bids for connection, and the other person turned toward them. A bid is tiny, did you see that? A small observation, an ordinary touch on the arm, showing something you found funny. The bid is asking to be noticed. Turning toward means noticing. The couples and friends who turned toward the bids, even the quiet ones, even the ones that seemed trivial, kept their warmth. The ones who turned away or didn't notice the bid at all slowly lost it. The cost of this is almost nothing each time. A fraction of a moment, a fraction of your attention, but the return on that small, fractional, on-purpose noticing is the whole bond. This is the science underneath the practice. The nearest bond is kept alive not by the big moments, but by the tiny turnings toward, done again and again over a long time. Here's the turn I want you to sit with, because it's the one most people never get to. We've talked about presents that cost you something. We've talked about turning toward. Both of those are real, and both of them are still quiet, things you do without necessarily saying what they mean. But the fifth book goes further than that. It says, the near bond needs something we almost never give it, the words. Not, I love you on a loop until it's white noise. Something more specific than that. Something like, I see you working really hard and I notice it. Or, I'm choosing to be here with you tonight because I want to be here. Or, as plain as it gets, I pick you. The giving in, week 5, isn't just the hour of presence. It's what you say inside that hour that names what you're doing. Because here's what's true and quietly sad about most close bonds. The person who needs to hear, I'm choosing you most, is the one you've been with long enough that they stopped expecting you to say it. They stopped expecting it because you stopped. Not because you stopped meaning it. Because it started to feel assumed, obvious, too embarrassing to say to someone you've been next to for 20 years. But obvious is not the same as felt. The words are the give. Say them. Let's zoom out for a second, because it's week 5 and you've been at this for a month, and I want you to see the whole shape of what you built. Week 1, you became a go-to for one person. You planted yourself as someone else could count on. Week 2, you tested a doubt. You gave past the voice that said, they won't care, and found out whether it was right. Week 3. You started a flow. You put something in motion that could go further than you can carry it alone. Week 4. You made an ask. You practiced the humility of needing, which is the other side of giving. And week 5. This one, you turn toward the person closest to you and give them the one thing near bonds run out of most quietly, the one thing that's hardest to name when you're always trying to give outward. Presence. Chosen. Costly. Said out loud. These 5 weeks weren't about becoming a bigger giver. They were about closing the loop that already exists. The one between you and the people near you. the flow that goes outward and doesn't come back because nobody's pointing at home. Week 5 points at home. That's the whole month. That's the whole practice. And that jar we've been talking about all along, the one that everyone fills, it lives right here, in this nearest bond, between you and the person you've just decided to spend something real on. So here's the give for week 5. And I'm going to be precise, because this is the one that matters most, and the one it's easiest to do halfway. Name your closest person. Not a list of people you love. One person. The one it's easiest to take for granted. The one whose forgiveness you rely on. The one who stopped expecting you to say the thing. Then give them one real, ordinary stretch of you, fully. Phone away. Not in your pocket, but away. No half attention, no running commentary in your head about the other things you should be doing. A walk where you actually talk, and you ask the question you've been avoiding. A dinner where you listen all the way to the end of what they're saying without preparing your next line. An hour of doing the thing they've been mentioning for weeks that you keep meaning to get to, and inside that hour, say the thing. Not a grand speech, just one clear sentence that names what you're doing. I'm here because I want to be here. Or, I see how hard you've been working and I want you to know that. Or as plain as it comes, I pick you. The costly part is not the time. It's the words. The time is the gift wrap. The words are what's inside. Give the one that's inside. Here's what I've seen happen, and what the fifth book describes. When someone makes one real, costly, ordinary give to the person closest to them and says the thing out loud. The person who receives it doesn't always know what to do with it at first. Sometimes they go quiet. Sometimes they say, "Oh, you don't have to," and trail off. Sometimes they say, "Thank you," in a voice that sounds like they forgot what it was like to be thanked. And then, quietly, things shift. Not in some big, visible way. But the person who received the give starts giving too, not because they kept score, but because something that was stuck got unstuck. The closing toward moves in both directions. The flow that had only gone outward or had stopped entirely finds its way around again. The near bond that had been running on quiet loyalty and old history gets something new in it. Presence, chosen, on a Tuesday evening, just because. That's the jar, lived inside the nearest bond. You can't run out of something that everyone is filling, and it starts right here, between two people, where the flow begins again. And that's the month. 5 weeks, 5 small gives. You became a go-to. You tested a doubt. You started a flow. You made an ask. And now you've spent something real on the person who's already closest and said the thing out loud. None of this was heroic. That's the point. The fifth book says the bonds that hold a life together are not held by the grand moments. They're held by the small, on-purpose acts, the turning toward, the one full hour, the 3 words you stopped saying because they started to feel obvious. Obvious is not felt. Say it anyway. Whatever you do from here, bring the habit with you. Give first, in small, ordinary ways, toward the people near you and the people just outside you, and let the flow go out and come back and go out again. The jar that everyone fills doesn't run dry. It starts with you, and it starts right now with the nearest person you've got. 5 weeks. One habit. One jar. Thank you for being here with me for all of them, watched over, as always, by Daisy.